Good morning. Today is Friday, August the 27th. Joining us this morning is Simple Country Therapist and all-around nice guy, Lou Quimby.
Thank you.
All right. Are you ready for our question this morning?
I certainly am.
All right. Why is money set aside for corrupt purposes called a slush fund?
Oh, boy. To be used as needed.
Okay. Slush refers to the refuse, fat, and grease from a cook's galley. In the British Navy many years ago, a ship's slush was often sold as a lubricant, with the proceeds being used to buy small little luxury items for the ship's enlisted men. The money resulting from these sales was called the ship's slush fund. Later, the term was applied to a fund set up for similar purposes, but contributed to by the enlisted men. Today, of course, the money refers to money being kept are being used for bribery, political payoffs, and other corrupt practices.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I got a question. We have never talked about dementia, and it certainly seems to be discussed on a more regular basis. I think as we all get older, we know more and more folks that suffer from it.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Freehan, who was, I don't know why, because I was not ever a big Detroit Tiger fan, but he was a catcher in the 60s and 70s, died after having two and a half years of dementia, which then slid into Alzheimer's. And it just, I think as we live longer and we hear more and more people actually disclosing what conditions are, it's more and more prevalent. But it's, I think, one of those things that's as scary as anything that's out there is this concept of dementia.
Yeah.
What is it?
What is it?
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, it's a neurological deterioration of brain function.
So with family members and primary caregivers dealing with folks suffering from dementia, how do you avoid the frustrations and some of those aspects that spouses go through, that kids go through, that friends go through, as they see somebody that they know and care about start to decline?
Well, one of the frustrating things about dementia is when you talk to people with dementia or Alzheimer's is the memory confabulation. And people will begin to talk about historical issues or issues from their childhood or their past, or the present and the past get mixed up together. So one of the things that happens when you're talking to somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's is to, instead of trying to distract them or make them behave rationally, which isn't going to happen, is to ask them questions about what they're talking about. So instead of avoiding the subject, for example, there's a kid who was interested in aviation before World War II, and now he's old and has dementia. So when he's talking about things, he'll go into some confabulation about flying, being a fighter pilot, or a cargo carrier, or something like that. And instead of avoiding that conversation and not being able to follow it, ask some questions of the person with the dementia about what they're remembering. And instead of then being frustrated with them being all over the place conversationally, ask them questions about what they're talking about instead of avoiding it. Say, well, how old were you when you were interested in flying? And what happened then? And what did you do in World War II? Now, the kid was 14, so obviously there's some
gaps, or some fiction, yeah.
Big big gaps in reality. At 14, he's not going to be enlisted or anything. But he's got memories that he's concocted about hopes, wishes, dreams, what he could have, should have, would have, might have done. And that's what's going on in his head. So instead of avoiding that, which is frustrating for the dementia person, ask them some questions about how they're doing, what did they get out of it, what did they like, what positions did they hold, what did they do, were they in support, or did they actually fly? And all this is confabulation on their part, which is fine, but it gives them a chance to run with their memories, as it were, without being frustrated by a caretaker saying, oh, you were too young for that, so don't talk about that. It's not possible.
So kind of show interest rather than
and ask them questions.
Be logical about, yeah.
Yeah, ask them questions about it.
How, with something like that, in that those typical scenarios, is that a well-developed thought that most people have, or is it going to be like about a two-minute conversation and then it'll just...
It depends on what you get into, but it's not a well-developed thought. It's a confabulation of pieces that are put together in unrealistic ways. And it's kind of a free flow of imagination and reality. Some of it's true. They may have had an interest in aviation, but were too young to do anything about it, of course, which is fine.
But just kind of let them run the course, so to speak.
Yeah, instead of making a big deal out of it isn't true, it couldn't happen, you were too young.
Right, just let them have...
It's not a rational confabulation that they're making.
Right, right.
And so in order to avoid the frustration as a caretaker, trying to force them into rational behavior, just go with it. And ask them questions.
Which we'll do after we take our break. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this simple morning with simple country therapist Lou Quimby.
Yes, simple country therapist.
Where does frustration come from? I would suspect that the affected individual who's dealing with the dementia or the early stages of Alzheimer's gets very frustrated. The person or the family or the support network or the friends also feel sadness and empathy and frustration also. So how do you relieve that frustration feeling?
Well, the frustration on the caretaker's part has to do with the lack of control. There's nothing they can do to make the person recover. And then you get into a control struggle sometimes with caretakers about trying to make things rational and productive, which is not going to happen. So just kind of go with the flow. But that means the caretakers have to give up their agenda of making things better. But the way to make things better is to go with the flow. Just ask them questions instead of trying to shut it off, because this stuff is all going on in their head. Asking questions can sometimes develop a more realistic flow of information about what their interest was, what they actually did. About the flying, for example. Did they actually go flying? Did they get their pilot's license? Were they in the war? Because it doesn't matter if they were 14 or not. What they got in their head is their hopes and dreams and wishes and interests and that sort of thing. Taking advantage of their interest by asking questions is a relief for them, and it gets the caretaker out of the control struggle loop. So it doesn't have to be frustrating then. Frustration occurs when you can't get what you want out of something. Stuff is in your way, you're conflicted, and with Alzheimer's, what's in your way is the lack of rational responses. So if you give up that, then you can have a pleasant conversation with an Alzheimer's person, and interesting questions develop interesting answers.
Now, what about for spouses? They are in a tough situation.
Yeah. Well, there's the actual grief of the moment, and then the anticipatory grief of the next moments that are coming, the deterioration, the lack of capacity to do self-care, for example. So there's a lot of grief that has to be handled, and it's important that people do that on purpose and on a regular basis. So it's important to know that, because the grief is for the loss of the person they knew, and the person they knew is now different and doesn't have the capacities that they had before. So there's sadness there and plenty of grief. So it's important for caretakers to pay attention to themselves.
I would think that one of the most difficult parts is that there's not the physical deterioration that's observable.
The mental.
Yeah, so when, you know, so much of the communication that we have is nonverbal, seeing that nonverbal avenue of information exchange may be there, or it may be not there at all, and to try to make sense of things could be, you know, really, really difficult.
Well, that's the part about the confabulation, is making sense of things. And what you get is bits and pieces of the past and the present mixed up all together. And it's difficult to make sense until you get some conversation going about what's going on with them, as though it's in the here and now, without it actually being in the here and now. And that's the frustration. So going with the flow means that the flow is going to change slowly or abruptly, or it'll be interrupted by stories about the time they went boating on the lake, which is quite different than flying, of course. So things get all jumbled up together. And it's not like a caretaker is supposed to fix anything, because it's not going to happen. You can't fix Alzheimer's.
Right, and dementia, obviously, similar in that regard.
Yeah.
Reading, you know, is an escape or is an entertainment for a lot of us.
Reading?
Reading, just reading books and magazines. Do those tend to be positive outlets for those suffering with dementia, or do they begin to lose that skill set also, or could that
be
something?
Yeah, they'll begin to lose that skill set as well.
So they can't read a book and enjoy that as something.
Yeah, and pretty soon they're just lost in their hopes and dreams and wishes.
Wow.
It's like heating up vegetable soup. You stir it once in a while, and all the vegetables come to the top. Then they settle back down. And you can't tell when you stir it what's going to come to the surface.
Right.
And the people with dementia don't know either.
What will be
remembered. What's coming to the surface.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Simple Country therapist Lou Quimby. Lou, whether it's dementia, Alzheimer's, or any other of the maladies that occur to folks as we go through this thing called life, one of those aspects are for those down the family line, so to speak, kids, grandkids, that type of thing. And dealing with their fears associated with what they see mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, older brother, and sister going through. Are there coping mechanisms for family members that may not have direct interaction with an individual dealing with, whether it's what we were talking about for the first half of the show or something else, so that they can mollify it or process it with less stress and anxiety?
Well, yeah. Education is part of it. People need to know what it is, what the onset is about, and what the course of the dementia is, and then leading to the death of the person with dementia, which may take a long time. And so people have to look at this and do anticipatory grief about losing their loved one, rather than trying to hide from it or make it go away, because it's not going away, that's for sure.
Well, that's one of the things we had. Grandpa's second wife had that, and it was like 10, 15 years towards the end, and you know, she made 100, so you know, hats off
for that. She made 100?
She made 100, yeah.
Wow.
But it was, you know, towards the end, you know, special care, set aside. You know, she was in a facility that was designed to make it as comfortable as possible.
Yeah.
But it was something that everybody dealt with. But the prolonged length of time started to become a factor also.
Well, yeah, people get ground down because of the coping skills that they need to have. And when you go to visit somebody with Alzheimer's, and you say, "Hi, how are you?" And they say, "Who are you?" And they say, "I'm your husband." Then you know there's trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, and avoidance probably isn't the best thing in the world to do, but it kind of starts to work its way in there as the sadness and the grief and the frustration and the fatigue all start to swirl.
Yeah.
Maybe those are the carrots that surface with the vegetable soup. Let's move on to some other lovely topics on this Friday. If it happened to be cancer, as an example, and there was a modicum of heredity to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, you can do the doctor visits on a regular basis and things of that nature, and that helps the logical side of it, but that doesn't keep the monster under the bed from poking its head out every once in a while.
Right.
So I had,
and that's where education comes in, and people have to know what the prognosis is and what the onset is like and what the development of the cancer does and what it does to the person. And some people have cancer and they don't have any diminution of their intellectual capacities, and they're just fine until they die from it, and they operate rationally to the end. Other people, they start losing it maybe toward the end, and they can't think well, can't think clearly. So it depends on the kind of cancer and what it affects in your body.
The overreaction, I would think, would tend to come from someone operating on the emotional plane rather than on the logical plane. But I would suspect that there's a healthy mid-range between those two, where you want to pay attention to what's going on, but you also want to be able to process some of the emotional components to it, either the frustrations, the sympathies, the whatever's it might be that you want to take care of or to address, so that you are as balanced as possible when it does come to that time where you need to do the battle against this malady.
Right. Well, you need to get yourself balanced during all of that time too.
Right. So sometimes
it's very frustrating, and caretakers get really pissed off because of how long it's taking and the drain on them and all of that. So the caretakers for terminal disease are sometimes a special breed of people. I knew a nurse who nursed a dozen HIV. This is back in the day what's the HIV thing?
Oh, the AIDS?
AIDS. He nursed 12 AIDS patients to death, and then he finally quit. And I asked him, why did he quit? And he said, it took all I had, and I was empty. And it's quite a drain if you do it for a living.
Oh, and you care.
What's that?
And you care about doing the good job and being there for those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't care, there's not much of an impact to you. For professionals that deal with this part of life, I would think that they need to have another skill set of how they cope. Somebody was in geriatrics, for example. Okay, you're at the end of the road for a lot of the folks. You got to be able to process that a little bit, and we'll talk about some of their skill sets when we come back.
Hey, folks, flying local is buying local. And with 3 airlines serving 5 destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Lou Quimby. So, Lou, folks that have the passion for helping others, whether it's long-term skill nurses, doctors, folks that deal with a maternity doctor, probably not so much so. But for somebody that's dealing with the things that occur more towards the end of life, how do they do it and not get too affected? Or, like you were saying, your nurse buddy just kind of checking out after chasing their career for a short period of time.
Yeah. People that are professional caretakers also need to have a life of their own. They need to have their own people, their own parties, their own dinners, their own hobbies, their own ways of structuring time that make life good for them. So if they like to hunt and fish, then they need to figure out ways to get that done. Part of this then has to do with limiting how far down the rabbit hole, how far down the rabbit hole you want to get. And that has to do with how you take on the caseloads one after another. So it's important to have a life of their own. Gardening is a good outlet for caretakers because they're building new life.
Right, kind of balancing the scale, so to speak.
Yeah, that helps.
Do enough people that are in these arenas understand what we've been talking about, or do they just kind of go along and then realize that they need some attention?
Well, again, this depends upon education, one, and two, the personal capacity of the caretaker to be part of that process without getting horribly tangled up in the emotions of it, because it's relatively fixed, and the deterioration is going to happen whether you like it or not. And if you get into a control struggle about making it not happen, you're in serious trouble.
So it's not a win-lose, it's more gradations in between?
Yeah, and there's a lot of balance that's required.
Is that,
and then
what about peer groups? I mean, you said outside interest, but are there peer groups and peer support groups that can be leaned on?
Yeah. Caretakers sometimes get involved in a group for caretakers, and then they talk about those issues of the range of control they have and what it is personally that they're attempting to do. Caretaking is tricky. It's a combination of physical and psychological and emotional balance. It's hard not to get involved emotionally with somebody with dementia because it's very frustrating to work with somebody who's not cognitively on the table, as it were. So people have to be aware of that on purpose ahead of time up front.
And I would think also because the length of time that they're working with these individuals, they develop a bond also.
Say again?
They develop a personal bond with the individual or patient,
yes,
as well, so that they then are building a relationship as the capacity for having a relationship is declining.
Yeah. And sometimes it gets to be like another family member, even though the caretaker doesn't know the people that they're meeting for care. Sometimes the emotional bonds become like a family member, and then you get the grief of a family member dying.
Right, which explains why your buddy had all the energies taken out of him.
Yeah, and he really threw himself into it. And those were the days when dying of AIDS was a horrible fate, full of carcinomas, and it was just
So he
miserable.
There were all kinds of layers that they had to deal with. Well, hopefully if folks are in that kind of a situation, they can reach out to folks. I know that there's an awful lot of support services in the area and support groups. So thanks for spending some time with us this morning, Lou.
Sure thing.
All righty. Thank you very much, sir. See everybody else tomorrow.